Hi, this is Drew, and thanks for listening to our podcast. Hopefully, you've been enjoying our show for a while now, but if you're a brand new listener, then the next 50 seconds are not for you, so just go ahead and fast forward a bit. I just wanted to ask our longtime listeners to consider becoming patrons of The Drew Marshall Show, because by throwing us just a few bucks each month, you'll be helping what many tell us is the most brutally authentic spiritual show they've ever heard stay on the air. Look, as loyal podcast listeners, you've been getting the same programming our radio listeners have been hearing live Saturdays 1 to 5 for the last 16 years. Except you get to hear everything commercial-free, you smart consumer, you. Well, because of a brand new arrangement with our studio, our expenses have now gone through the roof. And to be brutally honest, we could use the help to cover those costs. So just before you go to bed tonight, maybe you could stop by our website and click on the giant click here to become a patron sign. And if a whole bunch of you were able to scrounge up like $4 per month, then individually your $4 would have just made a massive difference in helping us cover what it costs to bring you the Drew Marshall Show. Okay, that's it. Sorry to bug you. Now on with the show. I hope you have a good sleep tonight after you become a patron.
Of every beautiful thing in this game.
Well, we've got to move on here. I could listen to this guy's music for a long time. Marion Gilbert is on the line with us. She is a registered physical therapist. She's been practicing physical therapy for over 30 years and is the owner of a well-established physical therapy practice and movement studio in Grass Valley, California. I was going to say it's high on a hill.
Oh,
see what I did there?
Grass
Valley. Yeah, that was
my
good.
My son wants to be a physiotherapist.
Does he?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's since grade six. What a weird kid.
Yeah, your kid
I mean,
is.
Not that he wants to be a physiotherapist.
No.
It's grade six.
Yeah, nice recovery. Yeah. She has extensive training in cranial sacral therapy, somato-emotional release, and trauma resolution. My goodness.
We're going to get those explained.
She has been actively using the Enneagram system, an emotional cognitive map of human personality structure. See, that's what I need to say, because
yep.
I keep saying it's a personality typing system, and that cheapens it. It's so much more than that. Folks,
nice
it's
recovery.
An emotional cognitive map of human personality structure. And we're going to chat with Marion right now. What a pleasure to have you on the show, Marion. The website is mariongilbert.com. That's Marion with an O, M-A-R-I-O-N, gilbert.com. And Marion, where are you? Are you actually in Grass Valley, California right now?
Yes, I am. I'm actually in my private practice currently, but
good.
It's closed, so I have all the space in the world.
Nice, nice. Now, I just heard a little bit of an accent in your voice. Tell me about that. Where's that from?
Originally, I was born in Holland, the Netherlands, and probably resided there until I was about 26 years old.
And what brought you over to California? Was it a love interest?
It's the droppies.
The
yeah,
droppies.
It probably goes like that. Huh? I mean, I was traveling around Europe, you know, with the Eurail passes and for an indeterminate amount of time, and I met a California man, and that's how it happened.
Hate when that happens. Hey?
Wish they all
I liked
could
it.
Be.
It so, was a good thing.
I've asked our other gurus this question, and I preface it by sort of saying we've got this. Tim and I have a mutual friend named Rob, who every time we talk about the Enneagram on the show, he has to chirp us online. He's one of those, what do you call them, trolls?
Yeah.
Who just goes
yeah.
in the comments section and says, Z, 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 or in Canada, Z, 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 Z. He thinks this is boring. Meanwhile, for me, it's one of the most exciting things that has transformed my world. I mean, it really has.
Yeah.
So if you were just talk to Rob for a second. So let's just pretend I've got him in handcuffs, tied to a chair. He can't leave. I've given him 10 cups of coffee. He can't fall asleep. What are you going to say to him?
Wake up. That's what the Enneagram is meant to do, is wake people up.
And the reality is, if you're not at that place, then you're just not there. You're not going to be interested. It's like the Camino. I can't tell someone to go and do the Camino because I did it. The Camino finds them in some weird way. And it's the same thing with the Enneagram.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, there's a lot of press right now, not only in the whole neuroscience that is beginning to verify a lot of this, what the Enneagram has been working with for a long time, but especially, I think, in relationship to the content of and the wonderful complexity in a system that is multifaceted, and it really connects everything from spiritual experience all the way down to instinctual cellular reality of our being. And that's why I think it's a very exciting system, and much more than a personality system, for sure.
Okay, so why did you first get into it? I mean, I got into it because I came to this realization around the age of 50 that I had these fractured relationships, and I was the common denominator, you know? I was the jerk, and I needed to figure out what was going on inside of me that was, you know, impacting these relationships. How about you?
Right. I didn't have that issue. I had more an adjacent noticing in a person who took the training and then came back and was working for us, and she was a transformed human being from before she left to when she came back. And that really caught my attention, and I said, I need to know more about that, given my interest of this whole body-mind-spirit connection and how we orient ourselves around this in the world. And it's very fragmented, to say the least.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you saw a big change in someone else who had worked through the Enneagram material.
Yes, who had gone through the training, and it was significant. I mean, It was noteworthy.
Okay, so how does the Enneagram impact the body? That's your specialty. And to be honest, I have a tough time understanding this because, you know, there are some days, Marion, where I say, you know, I can believe it. I can go, you know, well, of course the mind affects the body. I've seen some very negative people who are just constantly sick all the time. And there's got to be a correlation there. And so why am I poo-pooing the positive thinking aspect of this world, you know? It just seemed, just because there's schmaltz that comes along with that whole positive thinking, you know, movement or whatever else, doesn't mean you throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think there must be a direct correlation between, awakening in the mind, healing the body.
Yeah. So, you know, just for your information, the mind is actually located in the body.
Oh, wait a second. Let me write that down.
I often say this in my trainings, you know, there is a felt sense of a brain that actually houses in a body, in your skull, that actually has an experience that's other than thinking. It has actually three brains in there, not just one, the over-celebrated neocortex one, which is only a small portion. I lovingly refer to that part of the brain, the pea brain, because it doesn't have as much information and receptivity as the actual other parts of the brain.
Okay, so help us, like if I came to you and I said, Marion, I'm just not doing well, and I physically I've got a bad neck, and I've had a chronic neck, you know, a C6-7 bulging disc, and it's pinching nerves through my arm, and I've just got to use this neck stretcher, and I'm taking pills and anti-inflammatories and muscle relaxants, and I'm just not feeling very present in my world these days. How would you help me using the Enneagram?
Well, first of all, I would just interview the body, and not after I hear your story with all the, you know, cognitive knowledge that is there around it. But then we go into, you know, what's the muscle tone feel like? You know, how does it feel for the person to be touched? If they carry any form of trauma, they have a hard time allowing another person to touch them. The placement of where, you know, the tightness and the pain is housing usually says something about the nature of where we're going to look in relationship to the Enneagram map. So the neck is between the head and the heart. So I'm always looking at what is the communication between the emotions and the thoughts and the beliefs. And then you come directly into the three-centered experience of the Enneagram that largely is organized in three centers that now is being recognized by neuroscience in the triune brain model. That means There is a somatic brain in the back, a reptilian aspect of the brain. Then we come forward in the evolutionary chain, and there is a limbic system where all the mammals come in that actually have to take care of their youngins and nurture them. So the attachment issues become important for somebody to survive. And then, you know, the neocortex comes on top of that, which is where people begin to be able to think, to analyze, to reflect, and become conscious of something. So these three parts of the brain are related to the three centers, the mental center, the heart center, and the belly center, which is connected to the body and the instincts.
Tim, are you listening?
I am.
Do you think that the Enneagram stuff that you have read so far and you've looked into, can you see that impacting your body the way that that Marion just talked about?
Well, for me, the connection is through my clinical depression and how I don't necessarily always feel
good example.
It mentally.
Wait, but Marion, can you fix him now, please?
But I mean,
I show him the way. But
there you go.
But himself.
I definitely feel it physically. It's not just a mental, emotional thing. There's a definite physical aspect. So there's no question in my mind that the connection, just on an intellectual level, without all the science and stuff that Marion's been talking about, exists. It just makes perfect sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because my mind is in my body.
Oh, stop it. Yeah. Don't
take
try
notes.
To...
Take notes, Marion.
Oh, it's true. And the nervous system, which is patterned, of course, because it had to survive. And the Enneagram very beautifully describes 9 different adaptive strategies so that we could go back into functioning as soon as possible, which is basically, you know, driven by the survival brain at the core. And the survival brain knows how to protect us from pain, from harm, but that on a long-term basis can actually become the disease. So like you had several relationships that didn't work out. It dawned on you, hey, that might have something to do with me. That is turning your attention inward. That's your first step. For the people, you know, your partner who's there with you, who is clinically depressed, you know, the attention inward and just begin to observe where in the body this depression is actually running its course is the beginning to find out what is happening. Where is the contraction? Where is the resistance to the life force?
Hmm. It's interesting you brought up contractions. I want to just say congratulations to Tim. When are you due?
I've been at 9 months for about 5-6 years now.
Yeah,
my body size.
He's so cute. Marion Gilbert is on the other line wondering what the heck she's just gotten herself into. Marion, you know, there are a lot of listeners who have heard a lot about this Enneagram, but they still can't really kind of grasp the overall general concept of this. So is there a way that you could go through the 9 types? And I don't even know if it's just like, should it just be describing briefly each of the 9 types? Or is there some way you can describe the 9 types and then add in sort of the physical stuff that you might, I don't know, is there something that you do that ties in with the 9 types?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to go to the bathroom. You talk to my listeners.
And me.
Okay, I will.
I'm kidding. I'm right here.
All right. So, as I said, the Enneagram is consisting out of 3 main centers of perception. So we see those as main lenses of perceptions that tie into the 3 aspects of the brain. And the first lens of perception is the mental lens of perception. And that is how we, you know, take in and are able to process information mentally. So there's 3 types that belong to this particular center. And what that means is that they lead with this center. It doesn't mean they don't have the other 2 centers, but this is kind of their lead center that they filter reality through a mental lens of thoughts, planning, imagination, and memories. So those are the categories of perception for the mental center itself. So type 5, 6, and 7 are considered the 3 types that belong to this particular aspect of the Enneagram. So all these three types are basically at the core driven by fear, the emotion fear. So the doesn't mean that the other types don't have fear. It just means that fear is probably the core emotion that registers the most and maybe first before the other ones arrive. Okay? So fear instinctually and in the body has something to do with, the fleeing response. To be able to know when something becomes too threatening or potentially dangerous, that there is a very good idea to be able to have some legs in which you can run away from what's dangerous. So that's one aspect. Sometimes, fear can be, I need to run towards and get past, what is dangerous. But in either case, it involves fleeing of some sort.
Right.
So that is kind of the common denominator. Type 6 is the core type structure in that mental center that holds sort of one point of the triangle between 3, 6, and 9, which is the symbol of the Enneagram that shows that is the main triangle that holds each center of these three centers. Okay? If you can just sort of imagine that.
Yep.
So what, of course, fear is the driving emotion for that anger. The habit of attention goes to worst case scenario. Like, what is happening in the world that is not really safe? And let's go plan for some kind of a, solution to that problem right now mentally. And as long as I can be in that planning mode, I don't have to feel my fear. So that is an adaptive strategy. And to not have to feel the overwhelm of the fear, the six goes into planning and trying to make sure that they have plan A, B, C, and D, into their, back pocket.
Right.
And there is a certain amount of feeling of insufficiency in this type. Like they don't have enough strength to support themselves, so loyalty is something that they value because they instinctually and in their body, even though, their mental types kind of understand that there is strength in numbers. And that, again, instinctually is correct because as human beings, we are created to live in clans and not between white picket fences like the United States likes to think is the solution to problems,
yes.
Right? Which is a big problem in how society doesn't really connect up with each other. So the sixes have that innate knowing about that. So again, the beauty of the holy idea, we have a holy idea, which is a spiritual platform that when the type structure relaxes, what emerges and the thinking relaxes, what emerges is holy faith. There's a certain amount of a basic intrinsic sense of faith in the benevolence of the universe somehow, somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to faith cannot happen unless you have somehow mastered or relaxed the fear enough for the faith to arise. So that's point six,
okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Point five on the other side of the six has something to do with the mental category of paying attention to what the world wants from me. What are people wanting from me? Because I don't feel I have what it takes to really, listen or respond energetically to the demands of the world. And I feel like the world is encroaching on me and I feel invaded by the world. It demands too much and it gives too little is sort of the platform of the five. Their whole orientation of their adaptive strategy is all about paying attention to competence and acquiring knowledge. And as long as I really become an expert and find out what there is to know about something, I can keep myself from having to feel the fear underneath. And I do that through energetically contracting from their body into a center, focused center in their heads so that they're focusing mentally. So all these are strategies to not have to feel the overwhelm of the fear at the core of their structure. So again, all these adaptive strategies have lots of instinctual wisdom in how we survived in our life from early on, to being human beings that are functioning more or less without having any awareness about what's driving them, what's driving what they say, what's driving what they do. So the Enneagram gives you that insight. Oh, if I go inside and look at why did I just say that and what was that about, there is something that you can observe that will kind of lead you into a particular recognition of what type structure you might belong to. So on the other side, the holy idea, again, for the five is holy omniscience. And omniscience is an expensive word for all-knowingness. So that has something to do with my mind, if I open my mind and if I relax my mind, sometimes the intuitions come naturally into my being, and I can actually feel that I don't have to concentrate and focus and study to know from my mental center. I can just receive something that all of a sudden I have a bright idea. I don't know where it came from, but it was the right thing for me to have access to at that point. So it doesn't require thinking.
Tim, you should pay attention to that one.
Got it.
Okay.
You got it. Good. Then type seven is also part of that fear triad. Now, for the sevens, you won't notice that in the beginning because they are the life of the party. They are the positive thinkers that you were just referring to. And all their attention goes to is, or mostly in the beginning, is pleasant options. If there's something scary or something negative that's happening, they just shift their attention to, you know, let's just look at something that's positive and just shift to, distract ourselves and put our attention there, and our whole reality changes. So again, all these strategies have intelligence from a survival point of view. Okay? Mm-hmm. For the seven, it is, you know, I am afraid of a world that, you know, I can get trapped in and can be limited by, and I can feel that I am not having the ability to actually mobilize enough power to move away from that. So I put myself into my thinking cap and imagine my using imagination to go somewhere else. And again, that's a strategy, but again, you're not really getting in touch with the driver of that whole type structure. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the first center, the mental center, and it's good to start there because in our modern civilization, we are over-celebrating the neocortex, right? And we're not paying a lot of attention anymore to the emotional brain and the somatic brain. Soma, by the way, is another word for body. It's a Greek word for body. I wanted to demystify that right off the bat.
Thank you.
Pretty easy to understand.
You know,
right?
I'm trying to get some of the Jesus people to just take a deep breath and relax when it comes to this Enneagram stuff, because just because it has triangular symbols or a triangular type symbol on the front of it does not mean it's from Satan. It's not a pentagram. It's not some occult thing or whatever. This thing has had more respect within the Christian community for longer than any of the new sort of pop stuff that you guys have been sort of sniffing around over the last 30 years. I actually have far more appreciation for the not only the historicity but the authenticity and the I'm going to say the wisdom background that comes with the Enneagram stuff as opposed to anything new and sort of pop culture. I trust the Enneagram far more than I trust this new stuff that's floating around. Okay, I'm done.
No, thank you for that one. Yeah, exactly. So I would say to people that may have some issues and like in a triangle to relate to something that is,
occultic,
you know, demonic or whatever it is, what about the Holy Trinity?
No.
I mean, is...
No, that's evil. That's got triangles too.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, part of Christianity actually notices that certain things are being divided in threes that have something to do with completeness in different ways that the life force is even expressed. You know, we have three aspects of the life force. One is we're being attracted to something, right? In order to get our body into movement over this planet. And we are attracted to things that bring us well-being, and we are averted by something that brings us harm or that brings us pain.
Sometimes we're attracted to things that bring us pain.
Yeah, but then on the surface, that's not what that looks like. If we're attracted to something that brings us pain, there's probably a distortion in the process, a mental distortion.
Right. Or you just could be blinded by 50 Shades of Grey.
Something like that, yeah. Because the 50 Shades of Grey is exactly the spectrum between that black and white, for sure. And what that spectrum is actually about is the third part of the force that innately, you know, the third force is the reconciling force between the positive and the negative. Without the two coming together, just like magnets of positive and negative are attracted to each other, you know, they are intrinsically, you know, coming back into relationship with each other.
Right. Okay.
Without that, we could not move. So that might be a little bit too philosophical.
No, that's fine. I just want to reintroduce you because, you know, you're the one that's dumping the wisdom on us, and and that's new for a lot of our listeners. Wisdom on the Drew Marshall Show? What? So Marion Gilbert, she is a registered physical therapist. Her website is mariongilbert.com, Marion with an O, gilbert.com, and she's been practicing physical therapy for 37 years or more now, is it? I'm not sure how update your bio is.
Yeah, I'm getting up to 41 now.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. So now it has to say over 40, and then you don't have to change it for 9 years. But she is... She's our Enneagram guru today. All right. I just wanted to let everyone know who was talking. Marion, go for it.
Okay. So let's go to the second center, which is the heart center.
That's my favorite.
And that is a beautiful one, but we all have hearts. It doesn't matter what lead center you have. And that's also beautiful of the Enneagram, that even though there is only three types that lead with this center, it describes all the emotional and the mental qualities, and now the somatic qualities or the physical qualities, you know, of each type. Okay, so each has a specific flavor. But there are three of the types that belong to the heart center, and they are type 2, 3, and 4, with type 3 being the middle or the center point. Again, that's another leg of the triangle that connects the heart center with the head center and the body center. And that, again, points towards that we have three centers, and modern science says, okay, yeah, we recognize three aspects of the brain relating to three different lenses of perception. So this lens of perception has to do with the emotions or the feelings, the emotional feelings, and it has to do with attunement, and it has to do with attachment. And everybody knows that there needs to be a healthy attachment to another human being for us to experience the interconnectedness of all of us on this planet, being in it together. We like to also forget about that. But this particular center is what is allowing that, or the limbic system in the brain is allowing the communication of that between self and other and our connection there. And not so much of our disconnect. Of course, coming into this world, we are experiencing wounds of disconnect. And it can happen at birth. It can happen right after birth. It can happen in the first 3 years of life, which largely means you don't have any, you know, cognitive knowing about it. But yet it has already imprinted your brain and your nervous system with patterns, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what the Enneagram describes. And these patterns, from an instinctually point of view, I need to be attached to another person in order to be nurtured and survive my first three to, you know, 18 years of life before I can go out on my own, right? And be able to survive and have a good beginning in life. So instinctually, we are wired to want to stay in contact with our caregivers, no matter, you know, how these caregivers are either present or not present. We are doing whatever we can to stay connected out of a survival plane of awareness. So again, this is subcortical. You know, it's not happening in the cortices. And the cortices are that part of the brain that can actually bring things into awareness. So type 3 is the type that, and all of these three types are driven by the grief at the loss of distraction, of connection or distress. So the grief at the loss of connection is the wounding for that particular lead center that allows the three to go into an adaptive strategy of seeking the approval from others in order to be, you know, somehow useful by doing something, by accomplishing something, by, you know, being successful at something, by accomplishing a goal to be able to restore the broken disconnect. And, you know, that becomes a habit, and that habit begins to become myelinated in the nervous system, and now it becomes sort of a first responder, you know, behavior that goes, that is, again, under the lens of awareness. It's just automatically enlisted.
So this reminds you of similar things that Joe Dispenza talks about a little bit.
Yes. Okay. Yes, it's similar. Except for this, this has the beauty of actually recognizing the specific patterns.
Got it.
But this is the somatic piece that I'm bringing into it, and mostly my way of working with this is informed by Peter Levine's, you know, trauma resolution, you know, revelation in the, you know, 80s and 90s, that which I had the pleasure of learning from, and saw how we can reconnect with these lost pieces. Because
right.
How can you be aware of something that's not in your, you know, screen that's up, right? If it's in the screen behind it and it's not up, you can't know that it's even operating.
Mm-hmm.
So observing, cultivating an inner observer, like you did when your relationships weren't working. There is a grief at the loss of contact that happened over and over again. And finally, you turn your attention inward. It's like, oh, I am the common denominator. What is there in each one of these cases where I lost the connection? And through what part of me, you know, did I disconnect from that person in some way, right?
Yeah, so okay. Sorry, go ahead.
You want to talk about that?
No, I don't want to talk about it at all. all right, I'm just looking at the clock, and I want to make sure we get through the rest of the types here.
Yeah. Yeah, so type 2 and type 4 on either side of type 3 is a variation of that. For the 2, it's about really becoming aware of the needs of others and fulfilling the needs of others at the expense of their own needs because they felt that they weren't met. So they kind of, again, covered over the grief at the loss of contact by putting their behavior on the needs of others.
Hmm.
And the essential holy part, the holy idea part, is, of course, holy will, because the twos have a tendency on asserting their, you know, their will of fulfilling the needs of others without asking if the others are wanting these needs to be fulfilled,
right,
is often the difficulty. So at type 4, it's a little bit the opposite of type 2. It's more that there is an attention towards what's gone missing. Something important in me has gone missing, and I need to find that piece, and I'm going to interject it somehow, taking it from somewhere, what I see on the outside, and I'm going to make myself emulate that image or that ideal so that I can become unique and different in order to restore the connection. And in the meantime, the sense of inadequacy is being covered over, and the grief at the loss of contact is covered over.
Hmm.
Okay? So that's pretty much the heart. And it's all about, of course, you know, what inside of us has access to that, the intrinsic divine love that, you know, we're all, you know, created with. And that is the search for this particular center. How can I relax these patterns so that I can drop underneath to the parts of me that need my attention so that these parts can be expressing themselves and, you know, begin to seek the connections automatically that they need in order to become whole in their own hearts on the inside.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, this is, you know, next week I want to let our listeners know our final Enneagram Guru for the month, because we have a very special show on the last Saturday of March. We'll tell you about that later. But our last guru, Enneagram Guru, is Beatrice Chestnut. What a great name.
Uh-huh.
Are you kidding me? Beatrice Chestnut? That's phenomenal. But today, it's Marion Gilbert. Marion, you've got 4 minutes left to tell us the rest of the story.
Okay. So we're going back down the types, the belly center, 8, 9, and 1, with 9 being the middle. And their attention went to self-forgetting. Self-forgetting was their passion, numbing themselves in order to not feel their anger of not belonging. And anger is the driving emotion to assert oneself, to be able to, you know, claim the belonging or the right to belong. And with the ninth, that is being heavily overshadowed for their need to be harmonious and putting their attention on other people's agendas and forgetting themselves in the process. Hmm. So there is a disharmony within them with, of course, a heavily suppressed anger that is not being felt, and it's more explained and exhibited in passive-aggressive digging in the heels that is done with a sweet smile often, because they cannot rock the boat, because then they lose their belonging for sure. Mm-hmm. So on the 8 and the 9 part, you know, the 8 part has to do with the excess and the lust for life, and forcing their anger to fuel them in order to, you know, defend and protect the weak from the strong, and, you know, posturing themselves as strong and suppressing their own vulnerability, or denying their own vulnerability rather, you know, in order to not have to feel the pain of the separation, the innate separation from the clan or from others or from the belonging. And the holy idea, the holy essence there is holy truth. For the 9, it's holy love. And that's in the body, because if love is not fully grounded and embodied, it is not really fully loving, and it doesn't include the separate human being. Hmm. And for type 1, it is, you know, the whole objective is the anger at what is, you know, wrong about the world and the mistakes that are being made. And the attention goes towards correcting mistakes and, you know, being the ones that are responsible for being right and good all the way through. And again, they're separating themselves from their own anger, because that's not good or right behavior. So that gets heavily censored and suppressed. And what is coming out is sort of a small derivative of what the anger might look like. In the 1 is like, I'm irritated or I'm frustrated, but it's the core emotion is in 3 different ways. It's heavily held under, you know, some form of contraction, so that we can maintain that horizontal reality, connection, belonging, and meaning in our lives. Mm. And that's the wisdom of the Enneagram in how that happens.
You just knocked. You knocked. You're getting a standing ovation. Well, yeah, we're baby. Sitting, but you're getting an ovation from.
She's Dutch.
She's what?
She's Dutch.
What does that have to do with it?
No idea. Just thought I'd say.
You just thought you'd throw that out in some random fashion. Yeah. You should get your own radio show, Tim.
Yes, I should. Maybe in a couple weeks.
Marion Gilbert is who you've just been listening to. First of all, what a love her mellifluous tones.
Oh yes.
Secondly, the little accent, so lovely. Thirdly, the content is right out of this world. You are a great communicator, Marion. Thank you very much for being one of our Enneagram gurus. I know you're not fussed with that title, but you're getting it anyway.
Yeah. Thank you.
Do you pop up to Toronto at all?
Toronto. Yeah, I have been there once and did actually a training with Helen Palmer there.
Oh, good. Well, it's time to come back, so come back, okay?
Yeah, I'd love to.
All right. It just seems so strange to be out of time, but that's what radio does. We're just out of time. It's the end of the show. Thank you for your time, Marion, and we'll speak
again.
You're
welcome.
Okay?
Thank you so much for the invitation. I appreciate
it. So good. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. Well, we're learning.